welcome to the pod today. We are so excited to have Nadia Carta joining us for an amazing conversation that we are so looking forward to. Hi, Nadia.
Hi, Laura. Great seeing you.
Yeah, you too. I've missed you. We've kept in touch on LinkedIn, but it's not the same as seeing you in person. So lovely to see you. And I wanted to start with a story about how Nadia and I met. We were looking for amazing speakers to speak at our Digitex event in New York. And we wanted people who just had really amazing technical expertise, who had an eye on the future, but just had amazing personalities. And we're looking through all these different profiles and something just popped out about Nadia. And I contacted her and she came back and was like, yeah, I felt it too. And we connected. And then she spoke at our event in Digitex in New York and brought just an amazing panel of women from Google who are just so well experienced and so personable and just, yeah, absolutely whip smart. So we had great fun in New York and we've kept in touch since then. And we just had to have her on because there's so much going on with her that we wanted to share with our audience today. So huge welcome to you, Nadia.
Oh, thank you. That was such a great event. We had a lot of fun.
We had so much fun and it was great to be in New York. And we just did our last event in London with some of your amazing colleagues from Google. So lots of fun and we will definitely be back next year. So there's so much that you do and we want to just touch on a couple of areas. And we don't have time for it all today, but I'm just constantly amazed at everything that you're doing and your processes and how you do everything. And initially, I want to start with your concept of chasing these huge dreams, which you talk about having from the age of six and these huge visions and going about and getting after it. And yeah, how did that kind of early dream setting come about and how does it work for you now?
Yeah, thank you for the question. Yeah, age six. This is how I start my TED Talk, actually, talking about when I was six and I wanted to be a manager in a large corporation. And little did I know about management, right? Like I was living in a very small town in Sardinia, and yet I had these dreams, probably because I was inspired by my mom, which back then was a seller. What happens is, even without knowing in it, every time in my life, I was dreaming something and eventually it was happening. And I know that nowadays is very new agey to speak about manifestation and to speak about goal setting and speak about really making sure that you're clear about the things you want. And I've been doing a lot of research on this field. And what I discovered is that eventually every human being is born with the desire of wanting more. And whomever has kids and is listening to this, you'll know that your kids are always asking for more and they're always dreaming. And yet something happens in society when we grow up that our dreams are deemed impossible, or something happens that we realize we're not worth it. So there's a little bit of a wiring that messes up with our nature. And the reality is that every human out there, so you all, have the power to dream what you want, manifest it, and put it down as a goal, which is more the business type of definition, and eventually get it. Now, we can all go around the rabbit hole about the vibrations and the quantum physics. And if people listening to this are passionate about Deepak Chopra, there's so much science out there that is now telling us that by the act of dreaming and so wanting more for our lives, we actually create this process that connects with the entire universe, because at the end of the day, when we go down to the quantum level, we are all at one. So I get it's a little bit mystic and physics, but that's how eventually I started conducting my life, even without knowing in it.
Yeah, I think that's amazing as a child to have a dream of working as a manager in a corporation. Like, it's such a specific thing. But then having that dream and then going after and actually putting processes in to make it. So it's almost like the dream is the very start of your focus. Whatever you focus on is actually going to happen, but you need to have the focus to begin with. So I think that's fascinating and love that. What about the concept of dreaming really big? Like, do you think we put a lot of self-limiting beliefs on ourselves? Like, we have a dream, but we maybe only go like this much from where we are now instead of, you know, let's like shoot for the moon. And if we fall a little bit short, then, you know, we'll manage.
Listen, the self-limiting beliefs are real. And again, I don't know if this happens in school or in families. There's a lot of research, for example, that say that especially girls, I think it's around the age 13 that they start putting self-limiting beliefs on themselves about not being able or capable of doing something. And it's kind of fascinating. When I look back about my life and when I look back at the very beginning and when I see where I'm now and I'm writing a memoir about my life, I am fascinated myself. I'm like, how was that even possible? If I retrieved some of my journals of when I was a teenager as part of the research for my book, and I was reading the words that I was putting into paper when I was 15 and 16, and I'm really taken aback by the fact that none of what happened in my life was deemed possible back then. Again, I left my island where I grew up in Sardinia, for the first time at age 18. Mm-hmm. I learned basic English in college, and I didn't become sort of fluent until I was 28. And now I'm living in New York with my family, my daughter's first language is English. I mean, it's the whole thing. If you were to ask someone, they would have said, this is totally impossible. And so it's kind of crazy what happens the moment we unpack it. And rather than going after the entire dream at once, we set it as a vision and then we break it down in smaller steps. Now, mind you, still now I have dreams that are freaking big. Like, so big that sometimes when I look myself in the mirror, I'm like, what? Like, how can you still dream? And yet it's the ability of dreaming that keeps us alive.
Yeah, that's so true. And I love that. I think anything is possible. You need to have the vision, first of all, but then you need to do the work to go get there. And like you say, break it down. And it's not like these things will just magically appear, but having that focus and having that direction. And something I know about you is you have a bit of a unique tracking method for, yeah, okay, here's the big vision, but what are the steps to get there? You're quite an analytical person as well as like a very creative thinker. And do you use PowerPoint and that's how you kind of track your steps? And what does that actual process look like over the course of a year, maybe 5 years? Like, if you've got any insight there, I'm very interested.
Yeah, I even created a product about this to help other people in the world embrace the practice. So I'm an avid believer that when you write it, and again, there's a lot of research in this field as well, when you write something, it starts to become real. And again, if we think about the quantum physics and all of that word, the difference between reality for your brain and what you're actually making up is inexistent. Like the fact that you are writing, I published a book and a million people bought it, for the brain is the same thing as if that event would have happened already. And so the reason why I'm a big fan about writing dreams and goals somewhere is because it helps your brain see them and living them as they are real. So 8 years ago, in 2015, almost 9 years ago now, actually, I attended a personal development and coaching class where they taught us how to unpack our life goals and skill set. Now, mind you, this was in the context of a career planning, but then it can be applied anywhere because career and work and life, they're very intertwined. And so I don't have it here, otherwise I would show it to you. But basically, you would write what are the things that you envision having in 1 year, in 5 years, and in 10, 15 plus. And then you would lay down what are the skill set and small actions that you want to start lining up to get them. So I still remember in 2015, I wrote down things like my next 5 years goal are to have 2 children, to live abroad, to be married, or to, you know, run a Spartan race. And I still collect these papers, because then what I would do is that every year I would go back and I would strike the things that I had accomplished. Well, kid you not, Laura, I'm not married. I have 2 girls. I live abroad in New York. And 90% of the things that I've wrote in that 2015 plan, I've realized, including being an international speaker, being an executive coach, like crazy things. And back in 2015, I was living in Paris by myself. I mean, I had a boyfriend, which then became my husband, but it was in Milan. And I had no idea to get pregnant and have kids or even moving to New York. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So something happens that really enables the vibrations to connect. And I'm a firm believer that the universe conspires for you to get what you want. If, you know, if anyone has read Pablo Coelho and The Alchemist, when Santiago is going after his legend, people start helping you. So 2 things are true. You need to write down your visions and dreams, and you need to socialize it. Because what happens when you socialize it is crazy. People start helping you and people want you to succeed.
Oh, I had to pause there. You're back. Yeah. So write down your vision and dream. And we can edit that, but write down your vision and dream and socialize them, were you about to say?
Yes, 100%. Because yeah, if you keep it only for yourself, how can other people help you?
Yeah. And how do you balance socializing it when maybe a lot of the opinion is, that's crazy, you can't do that? Like, how much do you share? How early on? Because I think that can be an area, you know, often decisions come from a place of fear or a place of love. And I think other people's fears can leak into some of your bold ambitions sometimes.
100%. Well, my antidote to all of that is that you need to build your own tribe. And I mean, you follow my brand, I call it form your board of zeal, right? Like that people around you that are not going to shut you down, or they're not gonna deem your dreams as too big or too small. Those are the people that authentically, when you go to them and you tell them, hey, I want to publish a book, they look at you in the eyes and they say, if that's your dream and if that makes you happy, go for it. And I'm going to be here either cheering for you or finding ways to support you.
Yeah, I think that's so true. And I have a few really good groups of like founders and people who are in similar situations. And I think, you know, it's good to have that sounding board of others that are maybe in a similar position, and you feel like you can share these things that actually will be pretty well received. And maybe even someone's done some of them before that you can actually get some advice from. So yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. So moving on to all of the different roles that you manage. So you've touched on a couple of them. You speak, you have your own podcast, you're an author, you're a tech executive, you're an executive coach, all of these different things. Like, what are you most drawn to, and how do these intersect in your quest to inspire others?
Such a good question. Interestingly, I reflected on this very thing. What was it? Wednesday. So here's what happened on Wednesday. I'll share a little story. This is unplugged, real time. I got invited to do a little cast in our YouTube offices. They were looking for people that can, you know, basically read from a teleprompter and being on a green room and do a virtual training for then people to learn and this be published in our YouTube pages. And I was like, oh my God, that sounds incredible. Like, I've never read from a teleprompter, but I'm really attracted by the green room. I'm going to give it a go. So I went there, and at the first shot, the woman said, "Oh my God, you are amazing. It looks like you do this for a living. You are so good." I was like, "Oh no, thank you, thank you. This is, you know, I really love it." And this event that happened on Wednesday, and this is how it goes back to your question, what are you most drawn into? Really, for me, was a reflecting point on what do I get high vibrations from and what I can be excellent at, and the difference between that and what I'm good at. Now, for me, this is a very fundamental life principle that I've been embracing since 3 years. So it's been pretty recent in my life. And it goes together with my spiritual awakening. So here it goes. I believe that in life, for a variety of reasons, we end up in situations that might not necessarily be aligned with our largest life purpose. You know, when I graduated in college, I graduated in marketing, like brand management and marketing. I went into sales, and very quickly I entered Google. I was 27 when I entered Google. And I started taking one role after the other, after the other, after the other. You know, I liked the money. I liked the people. The company is great and everything. But I never paused to ask myself, what am I excellent at? Somehow, every role, I was great. I was getting promoted and all things were happening in a flow. So I never digged into it. And then during the pandemic, once we shut down and everything was a little dark, at least for me, it was very dark. That was a moment where I cracked. I started having big depression. I started having all sorts of issues. And I said, wait a moment, what's going on here? So I was forced by the situation to really confront and understand what is it that I'm excellent at that has been removed from me, which is why I'm suffering, and what is it that I'm good at that I can continue doing my work. In fact, I was even promoted during the pandemic, so my work didn't get impacted. And through that process, I actually realized that being a light for the world is what I'm excellent at. I can't help it. I have to be out there inspiring people. I have to be out there helping others. I have to be out there really putting those words and principles in everyone's life to transform it. And even accept it, Laura, I'm telling you, it took me a while because I had a lot of self-confidence issues. I said, who am I to even go out and stand up a podcast? Who am I to write those posts on LinkedIn? There are so many other people way more inspiring than I am. Who am I to even thinking about opening a personal development company or writing even a memoir? I'm like, was I crazy? But then everything was pulling me, and I started really observing myself. And I started developing that awareness on how was I feeling when I was following my life purpose and call. And kid you not, Laura, it's like day and night. And again, I do love my job at Google. I love being with people and I love technology. And when I follow my life purpose of being here with you and talk and speak and write, my heart feels so full. And so, I mean, you tell me, because you've been following me, it seems that the universe wants me to do that more.
Yeah. And I think the thing you can't argue with is authenticity. You know, like if you're doing something and you love it, it just kind of lights up your whole person. So yeah, I completely see that for you. And out of that process, I think that's an amazing process to go through, and it almost takes like a bit of a traumatic event to enable you to do that. Did you completely remove things from your life at that stage? So you're like, okay, here's what I'm excellent at. Here's what I'm pretty good at and I enjoy and pays the bills. And then is there anything that maybe you thought, do you know, I don't enjoy that, and why am I doing it all the time? Did you do that as well?
Listen, I started being more intentional on what do I say yes to. Sometimes I I have to say yes to things that are not super aligned to my purpose. However, that's where reframing comes in. To give a practical example, and I know that this is very actual right now in our times. If I could, I would probably go and being a speaker full time tomorrow. That would be my dream. You know, when I see Oprah, I'm like, oh, please, can you help me be you? Can you sponsor me? That's my biggest dream. At the same time, I'm in a life moment where my kids are still young. Life in New York is very demanding. There are some social logics. And so for me, working in a corporation has a purpose because by continuing to developing my skills in the corporation, that helps me in being a better inspiring person and a better leader and a better at everything else that I do. So is my dream to stay at Google forever? I don't know, probably not. But is it my job giving me purpose and is it giving me a life satisfaction? Absolutely, yes. And so it all goes down to how do we reframe whatever we're doing and how do we make it aligned to what our biggest life purpose is?
Yeah, that's so true. And you bring your whole self to everything. So it's going to bleed into all different parts of what you do. So moving on then, let's talk a little bit about Google. And you are at a very interesting moment in Google's history and you have a lot of focus on data transformation linked to AI. Is there a particular project, maybe it's right now, maybe it's recent, that you've been really proud of and kind of showcases that personal dedication to breaking boundaries? And how does that kind of fit within the professional life at Google?
Yeah. Listen, I'm going to mention the role. So before coming to New York, I was the regional product lead for two very large Google enterprise products. And I was based in Paris. I was traveling every week. I literally had the job of my life. It was so amazing. And one of the things I've been the most proud of is that back then I did the launch of a completely brand new product. This was something extremely complicated because it was a global launch and we had to train thousands of sellers. We had to manage events launch, clients reception, PR. It was pretty of a big, big deal. And when I was given this project, I definitely didn't think that I could do it. This was way bigger than my capabilities. And I still remember when my director came to me and said, you're going to work on this. I said, what? I don't even know that I can succeed in doing that. It was like enormous. And fast forward, this was one of the most successful launches. Everyone was so happy. And I got incredible, incredible feedback. And I think I even got a promotion out of it. So this is to say that going back to the self-limiting beliefs that you and I were talking about, very often what happens is that other people see us capable of something way before we see ourselves being capable of. Yeah. And I learned how to even trust when people are offering me something to say, well, right now I don't think I'm capable, but if they're offering me to me, there must be a reason. So that lesson, I keep it in my heart because even nowadays, for example, I volunteered in December to become an AI evangelist for 20% of my time. And what do I know about AI? I mean, of course I know about AI. I work at Google. Everything at Google is AI right now. But to the point of becoming an AI evangelist and an AI specialist, you know, I got a few moments that I was doubting myself. But I said yes, because my heart was bringing me there and everyone was telling me, oh my God, you would be amazing at it. And now that I just started, I can already see how in alignment that is with my life passions and with whatever the future is bringing. So this is to say, sometimes we have to be a little crazy and a little brave in just go and grab it, because yeah, then magic happens.
It's so true. And I think any time you go out of your comfort zone, immediately your monkey mind starts going, you can't do that. You've never done that before. Other people can do it better than you. But I think that's a very natural part of growth, and you keep going outside your comfort zone and you keep going, and then eventually you think, yeah, actually I can do this, but you still, that doubt is always there, I think, which gives you a healthy amount of spurring on sometimes, but yeah, you can't let it in too much. So probably on the opposite side of fear, you have a concept of writing love letters to yourself, which I think is extremely powerful. And how did you come up with that idea? And do you have you seen that other help other people in their own life?
Yes. So the love letter to yourself, it's so funny. Did I ever tell you the story of how the love letter to yourself was born?
No, I don't think so.
Oh my God. So it's very quick. Basically, 1 year and a half ago, I was sitting down with a client and we were in a coaching environment and something rough was happening in this person's life. And eventually I started then asking this question to everybody, but the question was, on a scale 1 to 10, how is the love for yourself today? And this client started pouring tears, like I cannot even tell you. And there I was holding the space for them. And I remember asking them, when you go home tonight, would you do me a favor and sit down and write a love letter to yourself? And they looked me in the eyes and was like, what? A love letter to myself? That's cheesy. That's what everyone says. And I said, listen, just give it a try. And the day after, they sent me an email with the entire love letter for themselves. And I was the one that then cried by how emotional and authentic this love letter was. And inspired by that moment, I decided to create a product that is now the love letter to yourself. It has been my first product of my Spark Your Zeal business. And every time someone gets it and they do it, it's magic, Laura. I couldn't believe that something that to my eyes seemed that small eventually was so big for these people, because we are wired in our life to always wait for others to give our love to us. And somehow we forget that we can give ourselves all the love that we need.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And yeah. And again, not to mention the research, but our brain doesn't distinguish between the things that we tell to ourselves and the things that others say to ourselves.
That's a and very helpful reminder.
Yeah. So there's how the love letter was born.
I love that. And I think that's something I will share with our team, because it's something I would never consider doing. But now I think that would be so powerful. And I'm sure our team would get a huge amount of benefit. So thanks for sharing. And we will definitely share the book as well. So you've also been extremely brave and shared a lot of the struggles that you went through as a teenager, which I think shows, you know, your vulnerability and also empowers a lot of other women and teenage girls maybe going through those same things. How do you think that feeds into your leadership style today? And is there things you look out for with maybe women on your team?
Yeah. Look, if there's one thing that the pandemic left us with, is the idea that the lines between work and life are inexistent. And as Brené Brown would say, vulnerability and the ability to open up to others and connect on a more personal level when psychological safety is there, really can do wonders in society, professionally speaking, in relationships, in families, in every system. And for me, this has been a pretty big change in my life. Before the pandemic, and I've written this in my book as well, before the pandemic and even before becoming a mom, I was invincible. I was unbreakable. Like Nadia was the always perfect person, the always well put together, the insatiable, tireless human. And that model was non-sustainable. Like, that model was totally unattainable, both for me personally, because I was putting a lot of pressure on myself, but also for others. And so as I evolved due to my own mental challenges, but also the life conditions that I was on, and when I became a more vulnerable version of myself, that gave people around me permission to connect with me on a more human level. And that created deeper relationships, both in business and in my personal life and in all of my systems. Now, it does take psychological safety. I don't think you can be vulnerable if there's not psychological safety. What I'll say is that the impact on the people I lead and the people in my everyday life has been absolutely incredible. Every time I share some of my stories and every time I'm very open about my struggles, I am floated by messages, by love cards, by people saying, "Nadia, thanks for you sharing this. I was able to pull myself together and do X." And that's magic. That's my life purpose. If I can help even only one person going into their life by sharing one of the things that I went through, that's for me, that is accomplishment.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that is really what gives you meaning. And do you have your own kind of personal lines? I completely agree. Whenever, you know, you can be really vulnerable as a leader and share things, you build that really deep trust and relationships. And that's something that you can only really earn. Do you have a line of, this is how much I share, but we can't expose all the chaos? Because sometimes maybe as a leader, you're dealing with a lot of things that you don't want to make there seem like there's complete chaos, but you do want to be, you know, create that human effect and element. So yeah, do you have any rules there?
I love this question. I actually had a person on 99 Humans talking about this, because you are right. The line is very thin between sharing too much, sharing enough. And I definitely don't want my team to be worrying on things that they cannot have any impact on. Mm-hmm. So for me, what is relevant beyond the sharing is the framing. Is how, as a leader, I translate some of the work and the challenges for my team to digest it in a different way. Because that's for me is the big difference. It's like day and night. If I receive, let's say I receive a concerning news, right? And I share it as is with my team or with the people around me, that can generate anxiety and that can generate a lot of spiraling and a lot of things. So for me, the vulnerability has to go together with the empathy, has to go together with the ability to say, what will this person think if I share this concept as is? How can I, the leader of the org, or even with my family, with my children, Laura, like it's the same. How can I, the person that possesses that information at this moment, think about how to land it in a way that doesn't disrupt this person's psychological safety, doesn't disrupt this person's well-being, and rather helps them doing two steps forward? This is, for me, the approach that I use when it comes to sharing or not sharing.
Yeah. So really within that, there's a bit of a time delay. So you're also not sharing, you know, the chaos in real time, whatever situation happens, and you think, okay, let's like reflect on this. How can I use this experience to help my team? And then share when, you know, you can deliver some context, when you can maybe deliver some learnings on the back of it. And then, yeah, okay, this thing happened, but here's what we're going to go to do now. And this was maybe my decision process. So it's actually much easier for somebody to take rather than, as you say, worrying about a situation that they've got absolutely no control over.
And, you know, one thing I'll say is that by doing this very thoughtful process, people feel more involved. People feel more taken by the hand, let's say, and held. And thanks to that, they will feel more connected to whatever leadership is thinking of doing. So 100%.
Yeah, I really like that. So just tell me a little bit more about starting Spark Your Zeal and 99 Humans. And do both of these make you feel like you're in that real flow and achieving your ultimate goal of having impact on others? Just tell us a little bit more about them.
Well, so Spark Your Zeal and 99 Humans were born at different times, I'll say. 99 Humans was born first and was born by the desire to really humanizing leadership. And it was born during the pandemic, so it was a child of that time. And the reason why Jeff and I decided to go on this quest is because we saw that the most effective leaders were actually the imperfect one. And these people had too little space. Often when you see people in the glossy magazines and when people are going on shows, everything is perfect, everyone is a millionaire and everyone is building empires and things like that. And no one spends enough time to talk about the struggle behind it. And so we decided to go and find people on a variety of industry that would be willing to talk to us about what's the messiness, what's the chaos, what's the struggle behind leadership. And we interviewed 70 people. Right now, we published 56 episodes. And every time, Laura, is incredible. We learn from people that are going through things in life and that have done incredible, outstanding things with a lot of messiness and chaos. And that's very inspiring, to be honest. It really gives those of us that are managing and leading the hope to just be better one step at a time. It's not about perfection. It's really about the 1% improvement that we can all make. So that's 99 Humans. And then I would say 6 or 8 months later, after I started 99 Humans, when I was really connecting with my deeper self and with my purpose, the story that I was sharing earlier, I was really asking myself, but what is it that I excel on? What is it that people want to hear from me? Why people are drawn to Nadia, right? And there was always this pattern, like people would be saying, oh my God, when you're in the room, we're all getting so energized. Oh my God, after an hour with you, I want to go after my dreams. Oh my God, after I listen to your content, I feel so happy. And I started asking myself, how can I translate it? What is it? And I'm really passionate about activities at scale. I can only talk to one person at a time, but I want to talk to masses. I want to talk to thousands of people. And so I said, well, what is it? And so Spark Your Zeal, the brand, was born, which is very descriptive because people will be saying, by spending time with you, I just sparked my zeal. I now want to go and have that passion and that fire to go and do whatever my mission is. If my mission is running a marathon, I'm going to go train. If my mission is writing a book, I'm going to go write. And so that's our mission. And it's really about kindling hearts. I always say I transform life and corporations by kindling hearts to generate zeal for life. And kindling the hearts, really putting that fire inside our hearts again, that's really it. Because once your heart is open and on fire, you will want to get whatever that you want to get.
Oh, that's amazing. And do you have any stories of people who you've been working with who've kind of had real gratitude for what you've been able to help them achieve? Has there been anything recently you can share?
Oh my God, Laura. You know, I'm highly hormonal, I'll say this. And every day I have a situation where I'm like, what am I doing? Why am I even spending time on this? And those are the days where a LinkedIn message will pop up or an email or a phone call. I remember last year I did a speech in the Stevenson Institute, which is a college in Hoboken. I gave one of my Spark Your Zeal keynotes. And I think I've received like 30 messages from students that were telling me, Nadia, this is incredible. You gave us tools, because I also wrote a framework. You gave us inspiration. And just the fact that you're doing this is giving us a beacon that we can follow. Or even last year in December, I flew to Chicago to train 150 Googlers on the Spark Your Zeal framework. And everyone was texting me and saying, this is absolutely amazing. Because also it's a bit of a show. You know, I would show up with my pink jackets and sequins and make it very fun. And so there's the show and then there's the content. And people are just very drawn to it, I would say. And it transformed their life. So for me, the thing that I had to embrace was really accepting and receiving the mm-hmm. love from people that would say, Nadia, thanks to your love letter, I transformed my life and I now got up and doing my business. And I'm like, good for you. Because that's when people are in love and when people are thriving, that's what makes me happy, Laura.
Yeah. That's so exciting. And yeah, to share a personal story you made me think of there. I was getting my makeup done at my sister's wedding, and the makeup artist was saying, oh, I hate my job and I'm just there like to kind of like her. She did another day job. So she did makeup artistry on the side, loved it. And she's like, I hate my day job. I can't remember what she did. And I was like, she's so amazing at makeup, had all this amazing content. And I was like, what's stopping you? Like, just go do it. Like, you're so good at it. What's the worst that can happen? She's like, yeah, actually, I live with my parents and I live with my boyfriend. Like, you know, financially, we could do it. And then like 4 weeks later, she's like, I quit my job. I'm doing it full time. And I have her on Instagram. And all the time, I'm just like so proud of her. And I hardly know this girl. But yeah, just like a small conversation. She was like, I'm scared. You're making me scared. And then a few weeks later, she's like, I did it. So yeah, I completely resonate with that.
Well, good for you for sparking her zeal. Yeah,
I know. I need to do your course so I can do a bit more of it. Amazing. Okay, so thank you for all of that. And let's just wrap up, because I love to hear this from people and the things that have really helped them along the way. Is there a piece of advice that still really resonates for you today that someone maybe shared with you a really long time ago, but you still keep coming back to it?
Yeah. So I will never forget I'm going to give two of them if I can. I will never forget. These were two of my directors. One was my French director and another one, was a guy from Tel Aviv, another director, and I was working with them. And so first was the French guy, and he said, Nadia, remember in life to always, always double down on your gifts and talents. And this came in a situation where I remember I had to deal with an enormous amount of data. This was a file Excel that I needed to analyze. I was like so miserable. And his point was, why don't you go and find someone that is amazing at that? And then you guys work together. And he didn't dawn on me. Yeah. And so since then, I live by this mantra, which is, what is it that I'm fantastic at? What is it that I'm excellent at? And how can I hire or collaborate or do things with other people so that it's a win-win for us? So the tip number one in a nutshell is always double down on what you're excellent at. And compensate with other people and collaborate with others for the rest of it. Don't spend too much time in really trying to be someone else or learning. I mean, not learning other things. Learning other things, yes. But if I hate organizing file Excels, I'm not going to kill myself trying to do that as best as I can. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
But rather, I'm going to go and become an amazing speaker and find someone that can help me with a file Excels. So that's number one. And then the number two is about self-confidence. And I know that we women suffer a little bit more from this limiting belief. And so to all of my women friends out there, but also men, you gotta believe that whatever you're up to and whatever desires you have is worth it for you, and you are worth it to get it. Developing that self-confidence, it's so important. And I fail a lot of time at this, Laura. That guy, you know, when he told me, my director, was because I was questioning everything that I was doing. I was afraid of moving because of, you know, afraid of failure. So give yourself some compassion and believe that you're worth it. Believe that you're going to get whatever you're going to, you know, set your life to achieve, and just be confident.
Yeah. Thank you, Nadia. That has been an incredible conversation and we are out of time. So thank you so much for joining us. Do you want to just tell everybody where they can find you? Because I know that people will be following up with you afterwards.
Well, I'm on LinkedIn, Nadia Carter. I accept every connection. You can follow me. I'm on Instagram. And then you can join the Spark Your Zeal movement, I'd say, at sparkyourzeal.com. And whatever my name pops up, giving a follow or write me an email, I'll be happy to hear from you all.
Thank you so much, Nadia, and I will see you soon.
Thank you, Laura. Such a nice
thank you.
Ciao.